We are back and better than ever because this is a big one, everybody. Welcome to the Clearing the Crease podcast powered by Bodog.eu. I'm Cebulski. That's Commie. That's Razor. And how about this rock star? We got legitimate rock star. He is probably one of the loudest voices in the sport today. Biz Nasty, Paul Bissonnette, TNT personnel. You see him everywhere. The man of the people, Chicklets, you know it, everything. Biz is coming up in just a matter of moments. Plus, we've got a free NHL jersey, all that and more. So tighten your skates, get ready to hit the ice and clear in the crease. Boys, this is it is remarkable to see what Biz has done. And, you know, I know Don Cherry's kind of a polarizing guy, but there's sort of a parallel in terms of their journeys where, you know, they weren't necessarily the rock star players, and Biz has parlayed himself into becoming one of the most important voices in the sport, Commie. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's very remarkable. He's done an unbelievable job, but I don't think he gets enough like credit. I'm sure some people do, but like with like how much and how hard this guy works. Like, and that's one of the questions I want to ask him. But like, I mean, he is everywhere. He is working his head with Barstool, you know, TNT. In the summers, he's running around. They got the Pink Whitney things. Somebody once was like, man, you should like, why don't you try and do something like Biz? I'm like, if I tried to do something like Biz, I would be a raging alcoholic. Doing like the Pink Whitney and the big deal. Yeah. You're going to the bars. But he does it really, really well. And he keeps everything together. He's done I don't think I could do it, being totally honest.
Razor, he's kind of, it's remarkable, right? I mean, in terms of see the journey and how the guys love him, like the players love him, it seems.
Impressive. It really is impressive. And same kind of idea. Like, I think we have to highlight just how hard he works, like you said, Commie, but also to him just putting it out on the line. Like, they did this, we're going to do it. We're going to stick to it. We're not changing what we are, who we are. And if people like it, great. And people liked it and it hasn't changed. And I think that's where he gets the respect from. And you're right. He's now like the generation, this generation's voice of hockey. The guys that are coming into the league want to be on Chicklets. Like, they want to have their Hockey Night in Canada towel. It is remarkable.
It is remarkable. So let's, without further ado, hey, listen, just quickly, everybody, we are officially on the road to the Stanley Cup. Make sure you make a play. Get into the action with Game Odds. There he is.
How about that double wrister from the boys? Jesus Christ. Just cranking it off, listening to you guys go at it.
Just beating you off. Well,
there you go. How's that for a read?
Definitely the loudest voice, not necessarily the most reasonable, but you said you'd probably be an Alky if you were doing what I was doing, Commie. I had to lay off the sauce. I've been off about 6 months, just over. But
good for you.
You gotta go to the wacky tabacky is what helps.
Edibles, Biz. Edibles.
Those two.
Better for the throat.
We could double dip. We could double
mushrooms. Do you do that a little bit too? I think those things are incredible.
Yeah, I do a little bit of that. I try not to do them too much. You know, I feel like they lose their effect when you're leaning on the microdosing too much. But yeah, every now and then. But I like a few joints a day that does the trick for me. And
a day.
I hit the wacky.
Hey, we don't judge here. See, yeah. Ball.
No,
I like no, it. I appreciate it.
I don't.
I'm all about legalization.
Yeah, nothing on the day of the broadcast, obviously. But as soon as I get done the broadcast, I get back to the hotel, I'll light one up outside with all the car guys here, like the valet guys at the Four Seasons. They're not doing it. They're just kind of aware that I'm going off to the corner to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I'll tell you what, that's kind of segue. One of my questions for you, Biz, and run me through in season, like right now, run me through like your week. Like, because I know you're like a typical week for you, like as far, because you're flying out to Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So are you traveling?
I appreciate the tire pump too on the work ethic stuff. Obviously it's been, you know, a lot, especially over the last couple of years, joining with TNT, whereas most of the time I'm leaving at 4 o'clock flight on Tuesday to fly cross country to Atlanta. I land, get to the hotel around 9:30, 10. Obviously Wednesday is a broadcast day, so prepare for that. And then leave on Thursday morning usually to go back to Arizona. But now, this year more than ever, we're doing the Wednesday and Sunday broadcast. Yeah. So second half of the season, once football's over, I've been spending quite a bit of time on the East Coast. So a typical week for me is doing a TNT call on Monday, Monday's also a podcast recording day for Chicklet, so we'll do that. And then usually sometimes also get an interview. So kind of just focus on that. Tuesday is more of a, you know, decompress, figure out other stuff that's going on from like a business side, talking with my buddy Jeff, who helps me with everything. And then also a flying day. So that just kind of helps me to get a lot of the phone calls, and usually not doing a lot of recordings like this. But because I'm in Atlanta now and settled in, I can do it. So it, and then Wednesday broadcast, Thursday fly back, Friday. And it depends on where we're traveling in the world, whether it's something for Chicklets, whether it's like the MetLife Stadium Series, whether it's a Winter Classic or wherever we have to be from, whatever we've, like sometimes I do one-offs from my own individual stuff, like go to a Kitchener Rangers game. So it just keeps me busy. And, you know, I've made like personal, quote unquote, personal sacrifice where I just like, I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have any kids or a wife. So I would say 80 to 100 hours a week, I'm just kind of dialed into what's going on business wise, whether it's whatever in the realm.
How'd this happen? Like, how did it happen? Where was the moment where you're like, holy shit, this is big now. And I got to take advantage of that.
So I would say, like, I would credit a lot of from the experience and how it started evolving when I was a player and tweeting out a lot. And then, of course, because showing personality, all of a sudden media members would more so it's kind of like what Rempy's going through. Maybe not to that extent because he's like the Jeremy Lin right now. But all of a sudden I was a fourth line plug being interviewed when I'm on the road or whether it was at home, because they were just looking for any type of personality. And given the fact that I was playing in Arizona, I was probably able to get away with it a little bit more, like what I was tweeting out. And back then it was Twitter was the wild, wild west, and not everybody.
But Biz, you also had a profile that had way more followers than anybody in the sport. And like you said,
because I would be telling regular fans who were calling me a plug to go fuck themselves. And people were like, like if I was playing on the Devils when Lou was around, I would have been shipped to the East Coast League, right? But because it was Arizona, and it's almost like they were embracing the attention that they were getting and media hits, that they kind of let me fly to a certain level. Rich Nair, who was my boss there, was kind of
great guy.
Awesome. And from a PR perspective, he was helping me kind of find a proper lane, to where Don Maloney a couple of times were like, Biz, I got called into the office. Like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I crossed the line a little bit.
Yeah, but, my bad.
Yeah, my bad. A little pee-pee whack. And then on my way, like one of them, the bad one, probably the worst one, was the Rafi Torres.
Torres. Okay.
And like, listen, like he's got a black agent or had one at the time, right? So I don't think we were even aware what blackface was. He went as Jay-Z to Halloween.
Yes, that's right.
I should have never posted that one. I remember Tip came in the room and he was fuming. Like, he wanted to kill me because I created such a distraction and obviously bad press for the team. So we went from having an awesome Halloween night, Halloween party, and to the next day, Coyotes were on national news. Pardon the interruption. Like, it was
how did you take that?
Obviously, he wasn't too happy.
I'm dead. Thanks, teammate.
I'll never forget. I think it was his black agent who went on Landsberg's show. What was his show called?
Off the record.
To basically be like, my client's not racist. He was paying homage to Jay-Z when he went as Jay-Z and his wife went as Beyonce to their Halloween party. So incredible costume, but here we were just at the center of the media universe, like dodging bullets.
Was that the moment? Cause we were texting a little bit then. That was a couple of years after I'd met you. Was that the moment, like, right? Was that the thing that took you from Biz Nasty to Biz Nasty 2.0? Cause didn't you have to shut it down?
That was the Kovalchuk thing when I said, sorry, communist, back to the Soviet when his deal got rejected. So everybody was losing their minds. And then my agent called and he's like, you got to get off Twitter. He goes, nothing good can come of this. Oh. And I was scared shitless.
I expect to differ now, but yeah.
Boy, was he wrong. But at the time I was scared shitless because he's like, buddy, they're going to maybe rip up your contract. So I was like, what? So I got off Twitter, and then all of a sudden all these season ticket holders started emailing the Coyotes. And then Rich Nairn, he's like, hey, are you telling people that we told you to delete your Twitter? And I was like, no, I just got off because my agent scared the shit out of me and basically said that I would have my deal ripped off if I continued at the pace I'm on. And he's like, okay. And then he went back to Don Maloney and the team because I think fans were threatening to cancel their season tickets.
I read that. I remember that.
Yeah. So he was like, let's work something out here. And he goes, listen, okay. So he went to Don Maloney and he came back. He goes, Biz, let's jump back on. But from now on, I'll monitor it. And anything that you're like, hey, maybe it's a little borderline, you send to me. I'll put it through my filter, the team's filter. And then, you know, we'll move on and everything will run a lot smoother. Well, how about this one? So we had a group chat going and, everybody would send like joke memes at the time to the group chat. And I had a BlackBerry. So I think it was Sammy Lapisto sent like a Happy New Year's with lines written out on a mirror, like a mirror table.
Yeah.
And this hot chick was snorting one, like the H off of Happy New Year. Okay. So I saved it and was sending it to buddies. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
During All-Star break, and this is all when Charlie Sheen stuff was going on, the Warthog.
Yeah.
All the coke talk, right?
Like all that shit.
So I'm, because of the Twitter stuff, and I'd been getting an opportunity to go to All-Star break in Vegas to shoot some stuff for Sportsnet. Well, I'm around the whole day working, shooting stuff. My BlackBerry was in my pocket and somehow that, you remember the ball,
yeah.
It went and I didn't have it a lock screen. So it like went in, opened up my Twitter as it's in my pocket, somehow went to that picture and it just kept posting it over and over and over. So it posted this hot chick doing lines of cocaine, people knowing I'm in Vegas. And all of a sudden, Rich Nair's calling me, and I'm not getting the calls because it's in my pocket, and I'm filming content all day. Oh, this is nasty with Sportsnet. And so finally, I look at my phone, and I'm like, oh, my God. I'm done. But luckily, it had posted it 15 times, so I just was like, I got hacked. That's the only thing I could fall back on. And for whatever reason, I couldn't delete all of them. It wasn't working. I couldn't delete my tweets of this happened. So I had to go to a sports book, log in through a computer, log into my Twitter account, and then finally delete them. And that's kind of when that was during the height of the craziness of everything going on. Like when I was going on the local radio station where they were hooking me up with Bibby Jones, porn star, like they lined up a date and, obviously, and she ended up, I think she ended up sleeping with Gronk around the same time, and she released a picture with wearing a Gronk jersey, and Gronk's in the photo just smiling. So she asked me to do the same thing, and I'm like, no, I'm not taking a picture with you. Like, yeah, I guess if like people on the radio station are aware that we went on a date, took her to True Foods, treat her. I was real classy,
treat her like a real queen,
treat her like a queen,
organic.
But my phone is blowing up at 7:45 the next morning after this. She's on local radio blowing me up. I got a small horn, bad in bed. We are playing the Chicago Blackhawks that night at home, fighting for our playoff lives. And I'm on the way to practice, like reading all this stuff going online about this chick blowing up my spot.
Roasted.
Small, telling everyone I got a small. Meanwhile, what's even crazier, she showed up live in studio at that time with her boyfriend. Oh. The entire time I was fooling around with her, she was getting calls from this guy. So it was like, it was almost like I was set up. Listen, am I hung like a horse? No. But do I have a small wrench where you deserve to go on national radio or whatever it was? KUPD chirping my horn size. I got a game to worry about. I can't be on on local radio defending my horn size. Could you imagine Don Maloney driving to the rink that morning? I'm on local radio. Hey, big game against the Chicago Blackhawks, fighting for your playoff lives, but we got Biz Nasty on board here defending his horn size. Like it was chaotic times, and yeah, I'll never forget it. So I don't know how we kind of got there, but that was the original Biz Nasty Twitter account that is now Biz Nasty 2.0, and that's how it all evolved.
Gotcha. So let me throw this at you here, where we're present day, what the like you've obviously heard us all pump your tires to the 10th degree, but where now you've become probably one of the most prominent voices and one of the most influential voices in the sport. And I'd be curious, how often when you speak, it carries weight around the league. How often do you hear from people, like whether it's a GM, a coach, a player who's either pissed off, sensitive, an agent? Do you hear from Gary Bettman often?
Yeah, I had a couple calls with Gary this year. He's awesome, though. He was good. I don't think he liked the Kim Jong Bettman. I think that's when I got. It's all in jokes, right? I mean, you can't be referring to the commish as a dictator when you're working for the league on national television. It's usually not a good. But once again, I don't take myself seriously. We're clowns. It sucks to hear.
But you work
sometimes.
Hard, though, right? Like, you work hard. That's the thing.
Yeah. So I also don't look at it like that. Like, I don't I'm the top dog. Like, we put our head down. We work. We're silly, and through the process, it's kind of just evolved to how it's evolved. Like, I just talked about how kind of all the wackiness started it all, but. You know, obviously joining the podcast, and then through the podcast is my assumption as to why they took a chance on me for national television with TNT. And obviously that's kind of played out, and just the fact that I'm all in on it. Like, it's my life, and you know, I enjoy it. It does it become stressful, but you know, it's kind of just been the situation where I've just kind of put my head down and I put the hours I put in, and we have fun doing it. And we tend to joke around a lot about the hockey. It's not that serious to us, but like I say, it does suck to hear when we're joking around about Patrice Bergeron renting ice because he likes to go on the ice and stay in shape for some of these old timer games. And then all of a sudden we're saying he's going to be making a comeback. So the Bruins internally have to release a memo saying, guys, this isn't true. like he's not coming. But it's like,
hey, I had to call him myself, Biz, by the way, for that one. I've been on the ice with them every Friday. I'm on there the ice go. With them hanging out. And I realized I'm the only media guy in this room. The only guy who's doing just a little bit of media. I'm like, hey, this is
you're
not
the guy.
Me. I called Patrice on a like panic, like, Patrice, it's not me. It's not, don't let this. He's like, Razor, relax. I know it's not.
Yeah,
me.
Yeah. We're just kicking up dust because we speak as if we're casual fans. Like, I talk about Crosby to the Avs all the time. Like, if I had a beanie in a bottle for a hockey wish, I'm trying to speak it into fruition here. And so going back, like, as far as like, oh, like the voice and the, no, it's just like, we're all the same. We all snap it around. We all fuck around. And I guess it's evolved to where it's evolved to, but it's not something I wake up and think like, oh, we're fucking around and having a good time. And if, you know, it's taken us.
Speaking of fucking around, cause I mean, obviously I follow your stuff and it makes me laugh. Cause I know you're fucking around, but these days you're kind of giving it to the Islanders fans. So I didn't even know Butch Goring was on Twitter. And so I read a couple of his, you know, his tweets or whatever. I read yours. I read his. Then I saw you and you guys were doing the podcast. And I think he said, like, he knows I'm joking. And Whit made the comment. And I, in my two, I'm like, I'm reading this. I'm like, I don't think this guy's joking.
I think he would sucker me if he saw me.
So has there been any other contact? Like, has there been any contact other than what's been out public? Have you sent him a message? Has there...
No.
Any kind of interaction or nothing?
Somebody texted me saying they were Butch Goring. And we have this guy kind of associated to the podcast. His name's Foles. He lives in Boston. He's buddies with Whit and Yans. And he's the ultimate prankster. Okay. He's gotten he texted Aaron Ekblad because Yans gave him Ekblad's number, assuming that it was the team chef who would come cook meals. So he was interacting with him, think he was going to set up this beautiful cooked meal with like surf and turf at his house. And then Yans and all the guys at his house were aware that he was being fucked with. So Ekblad thinks the chef's coming over with all this stuff prepared and he's got this dinner party planned. And then he cancels on him like 20 minutes before. And so like Ekblad's got to come in and be like, boys, the chef just canceled. Like we got no food coming on. I thought he was going to come. So he's a notorious prankster.
Yeah.
So I thought it was him. And then we ended up calling the number live on air. And it was a fan who'd got my number online. This guy named Dominic asked, and he like completely folded. He was pretending he was Butch. And then he asked to be my assistant. So that was the only time I thought
okay.
Butch was reaching out, but No, he's a diehard loyal Islanders fan. And listen, I might be dubbed as the Twitter guy, but he won the Twitter battle. Like Butch Goring at his age dummied me on Twitter and just schooled me. So I'm actually hoping that they sneak in and get that eighth spot, because I would like to see them actually play the Florida Panthers. I think that would be an incredible if they're able, because like you think of a tough team who's not going to get pushed around. The Islanders aren't going to get pushed around.
No,
they might be beat in the skill department with that team and you know, but I don't know, anyway, so nothing has evolved from the Butch Goring, but I think that he's taking it a lot more seriously than I am. And I think if I saw him in the hallway, I might walk the other way. Yeah. I wouldn't want to get
sure ready just in case
by a 75-year-old Conn Smythe, 4-time Stanley Cup winner. So just getting him back in the mix is fun though.
Yeah. What's it like, you know, because you read things online and you know, look, obviously a lot of it is bullshit or whatever. And I don't have any experience with it at all. Like, how do you enjoy? What do you like? Or how is it working with Barstool?
So that's another thing, too, is because I jumped on Twitter early days, the heat that was coming at me when I associated with them, I was used to taking that. Some people, they might read their mentions and it would fuck them up. They would go into a shell and cave into it. My give a fuck meter is like so low that, you know, maybe some people say that, but if TNT was like, I love working with TNT and I love like doing all of it. But if it was like taken from me as a result of being associated to Barstool, it's like, I don't give a fuck. I'll just go take that, you know, 20 to 30 hours a week of my time and devote it to something else that's going to get my wheels spinning. Grow something else. Maybe fucking hit the gym a little bit more and get a, you know, get a six pack or something, right? So that's why I said I'll put my head down and do whatever. And early on, I think, you know, there was a lot of check marks and things people coming at us for the association, but you know, I'm a pretty good judge of character, and I know who I'm associated with, and it didn't really faze me at all. And you know, some people didn't really want to work with us as much early on.
Really,
I think think we can all agree on that. There was kind of this like pendulum that swung a little bit too much, and especially during sensitive times of COVID, I feel like it was even more amplified. And yeah, a lot of people were in pain and there was a lot of things going on in the world and people were in a bad spot. And maybe I can understand why they were wrapped up in all that. And I don't think it was maybe even a time to stand up and try to combat them. It was more of a time to say, maybe this will get a little bit more reasonable as time moves on. And I feel that it is getting more to that place. I mean, I'm a Canadian, like we're centrist, right? I'm not too hard one way or the other. I just want people to be normal about shit. So yeah, it was, so there were some instances like Gordon Miller kind of came at us a little bit there. And yeah, I just kind of like, I said, if you don't like us, you don't like us. And we'll just kind of stay in our lane and fuck off.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
100%.
But it is also paid dividends. A lot of people might not have gone that route and didn't because they were afraid of what other people thought. But it goes to the people who might be online saying that they don't believe Rempe should be fighting this much or as much as he is in the NHL. It's like, do you think they give a fuck about his bank account?
Yeah.
He could do this for 5 years and then never work another day in his life. Do you think they give a fuck? Do you think they care more about being right, or do you think they care more about the person or what he decides he wants to do with his life?
Give me your sense on Rempe right now, because this is you talked about Linsanity as a comparable, which I think is an incredible comparable because everybody's talking about it right now, right?
Yeah.
But what we know. Okay, so look, I don't care who you are. I'm not the biggest advocate for fighting, but if there's a fight on, I'm not changing the channel. Like I'm watching. I'm still engaged to it. Like I still love UFC and all of it. So give me a sense of like what we know from a health standpoint, but at the same time, the buzz that he's created. What's your perception of what Matt Rempe's doing right now? It doesn't seem sustainable, but it's everybody's watching. Everybody's talking about him.
Fair enough. And like, I guess I'm one guy who can speak on it. Right. So yeah. I was actually somewhat of a decent player coming up. I was a defenseman, and you get to certain levels of pro hockey where those skills don't translate as much as other guys. Like the world-class talent out there is the bar is here. And I don't think, regardless of how hard I tried, I don't think it would have ever gotten there, because there's got to be an element of, you know, God-givenness. So I'll never forget when I was a D-man, the last time I got called up to Wilkes-Barre was in the third year of my entry-level deal. And I was fourth line left wing on the board. I'd never played forward in my life. Never.
Yeah.
And no one told me, no one came in the locker room and said, hey, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I remember looking at it and being like, damn, like I kind of guess, like, what does a fourth liner do who's going to play limited minutes? How do you make an impact? It was against the Philadelphia Phantoms. I went out there. I challenged their tough guy. Thank God he said no. I forget
who was that?
I forget who it was at the time, but if you go look at that Phantoms lineup, it might have been Gratton, Josh Gratton.
Right. Yeah.
And fucking that would have sucked. He would have popped my eyes shut, right?
Yeah.
But I remember asking a few guys, they said no. We ended up winning the game, but I'll never forget the admiration I got from guys in the team being like, I know you didn't go, but great job. You know, like they were thinking about you a little bit. But then that year and then the next 2 years, I was fighting at the pace that Rempe's fighting now. And I was fighting guys in the American League who were like juicing up. Like that was not even tested for back then. And it was probably a tougher league than what the NHL is now. I fought back-to-back years.
Not probably.
Yeah, exactly.
It was.
So back-to-back years in the American League, I fought over 30 times, sometimes twice in a game. And I was getting fucking bambied by Jeremy Yablonsky. So yeah, there's the concussion conversation wasn't as predominant back then. You know, when I got bambied, I would skate to the penalty box because I didn't want to give that upper hand, and there was no baseline test. I wasn't going down the tunnel for evaluation, and you kind of just dealt with it. And yeah, we're told that there's going to be long-term effects from it, but nobody was telling me to do that. And I knew that if I wanted to make it to the NHL, that was more than likely going to be the only impact I could make in the lineup to get there. And that was a decision that I made, the same that Matt Rempe is making. But that's also not saying that, like, I use the example of Tom Wilson. Well, Tom Wilson wasn't putting up the points he was putting when he first entered the National Hockey League. He had to be a disruptor with his with his physical play. And as time progressed, he developed those skills, and he probably gets way more time and space out there as a result. So
sure.
I don't think this is the ceiling for Matt Rempe, because he could still go develop his skills with the size that he has. But the entrance to the league that he's made, if he wants to do it that way and make the impression he's made, every single team knows who Matt Rempe is now.
Yeah.
He's getting his name chanted at MSG. And if this turns into a 3-4 year NHL career at worst, I think he's going to look back and say, you know what? I don't really give a flying fuck about what some media members thought about, you know, my health.
It was worth it. Yeah.
It was all worth it. And I'll tell you this, the coke and booze did a lot more damage to my brain than the fighting did. And I would recommend that anybody probably lay off that more so than they would fighting in the end. And that's kind of how I feel about it. And that's where I'm at. And I also have talked to some scientists about the testing that they do in order to correlate the fighting and the concussions to long-term brain damage. There's a bit of an argument to be had there, although it is a polarizing subject to combat. And I don't feel a lot of people are willing to stand in the ring to go against that thinking. There is a level of correlation. Some of the people that I've talked to who are neutral scientists who research this stuff, they will say sometimes when these studies come out where the correlation is attached, that they say that they're not going in with a non-biased perspective. They're essentially telling somebody that this person has sustained concussions, and where they look on the graphs, where it can get dicey, with the premeditated notion that they know that this person has dealt with concussions, they will automatically go to checking off that correlation side because they're aware. Whereas if they were going into the study based on the graphs are able to look at, they it would be that's kind of a gray area. We, you know, so they found when they were giving the scientists and the people going in with no premeditated thought as to what premeditated notion as to what this person had been through, preconceived. I'm French Canadian. I struggle with the big words sometimes.
I smoked a lot of weed too, so
that too, and it doesn't help. Go back to the booze, but they found that they weren't as staggering results. Where in fact that there were no correlation when they weren't given the information beforehand. So I'm not standing here with a tiki torch saying there's no correlation. I just think that there's a greater discussion to be had. And also some of the pushback that he mentioned is if you look into some of these people trying to combat it and go against it, sometimes these people being funded by certain organizations, there's also some, bias where they're gaining personal benefit to where the correlation benefits them. Mm-hmm. So I would like there to be more reasonable discussion around it. I'm not, just like my political views, I'm not one way in this, like there is no correlation. Mm-hmm. I'm more as like, let's get to a round table and have a reasonable discussion about it to know if like this is as bad and the fear mongering as much as like 4 fights in 7 games. It's like, is this really going to put him in a fucking wheelchair at 50 years old where you got to feed him in a tube? Right. Yeah. I don't know. So yeah. That's
kind of his decision too.
And ultimately it's his nobody's decision. Fuck. He had to beg the coach to go Revo against him.
Yeah.
George Parros is a Harvard grad and it was more lucrative to be a tough guy in the NHL than it was to be, you know, a high priced lawyer or accountant or whatever. Right. Like,
yes. Not one coach ever said you're going out there and fighting. Like Tippett was awesome where he didn't even sometimes say, hey, we don't need anything here. We don't want to, you know, give up momentum, or hey, leave it alone tonight, where, you know, I'm taking the coach's direction. Now I was in a training camp with Hitch, and I love Hitch. I thought he was an incredible coach where I think one of their players got ran in St. Louis and I was there on a PTO, and he essentially was like, hey, we didn't bring you here to score goals when I was on the bench. And then the next shift I went over and fought Bickle. I'm like, maybe I could get one more per diem pack. But once again, like, am I looking back? If I didn't want to fight, I could have turned around and said, fuck you, Hitch, you go fight him. Yep. But I was like, oh, okay. All right, let's do it. Yep. Maybe give me a fucking AHL deal or something if I go over and eat a couple from Bickle.
Hey, listen, you've been so generous with your time.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
I love snapping around with you guys.
Honestly, we could go forever, and we appreciate that. And hey, real quick, just a couple of quick rapid fires from our producer here. But throw these at you. You can just one or two word answers are all you need.
Oh yeah. Good luck.
All right. Who's winning the cup this year?
Leafs.
Best Chicklets interview. Good answer.
Good call.
Best Chicklets interview.
Ooh, I would say from bias as most recent, Vakoda. Did you guys hear that one? Yeah. We had him on Islanders. Yeah. Sometimes the guys that you're unfamiliar with will blow you away. And I thought he was just an incredible storyteller, and also had the perspective that I have, where I was just happy to be there. So you're just absorbing everything that's coming at you when you're in the NHL. Even from some people are like, oh, he actually kind of knows a little bit about hockey, where I would listen to everything that Dave Tippett had to say and from a structural standpoint. So he could just tell he absorbed every minute of it, and he was incredible. Early days, Tim Stapleton.
Yeah.
He brought that KHL early day. Like, what? He told the story on our podcast about how the owner of the apartment he was staying at in the KHL, they were subletting it when he was on the road. He thought there was a ghost in his apartment because he would come back for road trips. And he's like, I don't remember the couch.
Something's moved.
What the fuck is going on here? So he had pulled his groin when he was playing, and they went on a 7-game road trip. And Keenan was his coach. And obviously, you're fucking hurt. Oh, your groin's bugging you. Poor, you want to go back to mommy and daddy in North? And kind of giving him one of those, and finally, he's like, it's hanging on by a thread. Fuck you! And then Keenan was like, fuck, we don't need you on the road then. We're sending you back. So, you know, he takes the 14-hour flight back, six different time zones, opens the door to his apartment, the fucking deadbolt thing's on. And this guy who's staying there with his three kids and his wife. I think he slept on the couch that first night when the family was there. And then he was like, this can't be happening anymore. So he was just told us about the Russian gas, the training camps, is it called the Baza?
Baza, yeah. The base or whatever, I think it's
how
called.
How they were forced to stay at the Baza. So he was incredible. And obviously getting Wayne on was a white whale. We had Sid on, that was a white whale.
That was a phenomenal interview, the Sid one. Yeah. You're the only person I think that really got Sid to lift the curtain a little bit for a guy who's
agreed. And it was awesome to hear him like that. And the best part about it is because he agreed, McKinnon agreed, because he does everything.
Yes, and Nate was great too. Yeah.
And Nate blew us away at how he opened up about how he, you know, he was below a point a game the year that he ended up signing that very team friendly deal, and how he worked with a sports psychologist to get his mind in a right frame of mind, where I don't know if that was maybe a faux pas at the time or guys wouldn't have opened up about the fact that they were even doing it, where now, like, Clayton Keller talks about it. He works with a lady called named Coach Dar in Arizona, and how she's helped Clayton Keller getting that Mamba mentality. So that to me was huge for us, and Sid obviously opened that door. So I know I've been long-winded with this answer, but there's a bunch, and like I said, we're grateful that we've got all these guys on.
Okay, three more for you here. Who's the softest Hughes brother?
Softest?
Yeah.
I don't even think it's like that's not their game, and I don't think it's fair. I think I don't.
From the producer, I know.
No,
I don't know if I love this one either. But
no, it's a fair question, but it's hard, man. These guys have came in the league at such a young age, and you know how big these guys are. I think they've actually taken the abuse quite well, and have not bitched and anything in moments, have fought back and been verbal about it. Everybody's given Jack a hard time about, like, people come to pay to watch me play, like. Fucking Brett Hall would probably say that to guys twice a game.
All the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I know they're like, well, he ain't Brett Hall yet. It's like, well, he's well on his way to being in the same conversation. And I think Luke has been put on an island with that young decor, and he's obviously hit a wall. So I think they're all very resilient.
And Quinn might win the Norris, right? Like, that's,
and he's up there. So I think they're all very resilient given their size in the league. And my one advice to them would be is a lot of these young players, they like the ice time and they like to skate all summer and stay on the ice. And maybe the weights and putting on size is not as big of a focus. Whereas you saw the type of punishment that Sid took when he first came in the league, and where he never really liked the heavy weights, but you could tell he put an emphasis on gaining mass and being able to take the punishment. And he's just built a little bit thicker and more like a brick shit house, where that would probably be my advice to those guys moving forward. Especially, we talked about this pendulum, the teams like Florida, I feel like from a team standpoint, might not have been able to get away with what they're getting away with 4 years ago, or maybe post lockout, where these guys are a bunch of fucking bullies now. They could just headlock guys and rib shots here, scrum it up here. But once again, every single game I've watched of the Florida Panthers, I never want to turn the channel. Yeah. When I watch Buffalo, New Jersey, like, fuck off. Yeah. I don't need everyone.
Yeah. Last one for you here. Which player in the NHL drinks the most Pink Whitney?
Oh, fuck. I don't know, man. Some of these young guys will surprise you where they're like, oh, yeah, that's all we drink. who do we ship it to the most? You know what? It hadn't been available. I'm going to say Crosby and his buddies. It hadn't been available in Canada yet when we were in Halifax, but we sent a special shipment up for Sid and his buddies before it took some time to finally get into Canada. So I'll say all the degenerates out in Halifax, McKinnon, Crosby, and the boys love it the most.
thank you for this. Kobe, I'll let you wrap this up because you give me a relationship, but I got to tell
you, I love you guys.
This was unbelievable. And, looking at Pink Whitney alone, to see it in liquor stores, you know, everywhere across the country. It is truly remarkable, the empire that you guys have built, Biz. Thanks for doing this, man.
Hey, yeah. I appreciate you guys. Keep doing your guys' thing, too. I love chat with you guys. I think, you know, I'd love to come on again whenever you guys want me. And, I mean, Commie, you got better stories than I do. You should be fucking big. You guys should be bigger than spit and chiclets.
Oh, fuck. No, that's not happening. Be careful.
You're just too busy on the golf course.
I'm going to be calling you next week. You're going to be on here every week.
Yeah. Weekly guest.
New co-host. I love it.
We need story time with Commie.
Yeah. Biz, thanks a lot for making the time, dude. I know you're busy, and I'm proud of how hard you work and what you've been up to, and good for you.
We should do this again at Stampede this summer.
Yeah,
now we're talking.
Yeah, we do that.
That's where we're going next.
I think that's a great idea.
Commie will roll out the red carpet. We'll get Kiprasov there in the mix too.
the two dads here on the show are like, yeah, we can do a road trip.
Perfect, awesome, Biz. Thanks, dude.
Love you, boys.
All right, I'll see you when you're back in town.
All right, you guys are the best.
Biz Nasty joining us here on the Clearing the Crease podcast. Hey, just a quick reminder, everybody, we're officially on the road to the Stanley Cup. Make sure you make a play. Get in on all the action with game odds, all the props you need to make hockey exciting every night, including goal scorers and, yes, Stanley Cup odds. Bodog.eu has you covered for action that'll keep you locked in every shift, all season long. Make a play. Score big with Bodog. And don't forget, new players can take advantage of the Bodog bonus. All you got to do is use the code CREASE400. When you sign up. He's Razor. He's Commie. I'm Cebulski. What an awesome episode of the Clearing the Crease podcast. And we're not done yet. Stick around.